Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning as the case may be across this great land of ours. And it is a great land. Remains that indeed. And actually beyond, from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to Santa Country at the Pole, and worldwide on the Internet. Thanks to Broadcast.com for the distribution, and of course, the Intel Corporation for their wonderful mathematics that allowed this G2 program. It really is amazing. G2, what will it do? Well, gee, it will allow you to see and hear the program at the same time. So in other words, you go to my website, download G2. It's free. Free, free, free. Nice word, isn't it? You download the G2 program, install it into thy computer, return it to my site, click it on streaming video, and there I will be doing the program. And you'll be able to actually see and hear me at the same time. It's an amazing technology, and you can do that from here or the other side of the world. Ain't the Internet wonderful? Now, a couple of other things. We have a crop circle formation, which I think is a real crop circle formation. And when you click on it, maybe it's real, maybe it's not. I think it's real. Somebody should check the crop circle connector and tell me if they actually find it up there. If they do, there's no question about it. This is an alien gray. It is a crop circle of an alien gray, if I've ever seen one. Now, whether it's legit or not, I don't know. Somebody will have to check the crop circle connector and tell me. And at Sandia Labs, they've got a night camera. You remember what Peter Davenport was on talking about? Remember that? Sandia National Laboratories has a nighttime camera out, and on that nighttime camera, they caught this incredible flash that literally turns night into day, that literally the other day turned night into day, going back to the old Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when they interviewed the Frenchman. Remember the translation to French? And the translation was, the sun came out last night. Well, what Peter told us about, sort of translated in my mind to that. And when you see the photographs and or the moving video they have also of what the Sandia Labs caught, indeed, the sun came out the other night. Now, ABC has a new game show, a new hit game show. It's called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And today it crowned its first half millionaire, a Virginia lawyer who passed up a one-in-a-million opportunity, well, I guess a one-in-a-million opportunity, to double his winnings from $500,000 to $1 million. But the only category that he could respond to was metal music. So this is a lawyer who had $500,000 in the kitty, and all he had to do was answer one question in the category of heavy metal music. This is from the Associated Press, folks. And he declined. Listen, in Egypt, folks, they have discovered something really incredible. Dr. Zahi Waas, the director of antiquities at Giza, and a good friend. He's probably angry with me now because he wants me to come to Giza, and I'm not going to be able to do it. Here, Zahi Waas found 110 mummies encased in gold, G-O-L-D, gold. And they're predicting that as many as 10,000 more may be buried at the same site. That one sank in a little bit. There is one more item I want to get in here before we go to a quick break, and that is this. A scientist at Brookhaven, Long Island, well, the headline actually reads, New York scientists plan strange matter could cause all matter in the universe to collapse this November or December. New York. Scientists at Brookhaven, Long Island, have built a 2.4-mile underground tunnel where they hope to recreate nothing less than what they believe was the second, or the biggest, not second biggest, but the biggest event in the history of the universe. Within two spiffy, shiny tubes, the ion bunches race around RHIC's, that's it, their acronym, RHIC's 2.4-mile ring in opposite directions. Brookhaven physicist Thomas Ludlam, each collision will be like a mini Big Bang. It continues to say, we also expect to be a bit surprised, since this has never been done before. Well, they may be a lot surprised, because, you see, other scientists are not as sure that this is really a cool idea. One scientist suggests that the little bang might be a big bang, and the headline is Big Bang Machine Could Destroy Earth. In other words, one time around the tube. You know, to me, this falls under the category, we've talked about this a lot of times, of things that we can do, but should we do it? Of course, we plow ahead and we do it because we can. But eventually, one of these things is going to do something like this. Now, I'm not suggesting that I necessarily agree with the scientists who say that everything could blink out, but I'm also not disagreeing with them. And, you know, you reach over to flip up, no doubt they have a little safety thing like for a launch, you know, you flip up the switch protector, and you reach in and you press the switch, and they race around this 2.4-mile ring, and they collide, and the scientists think you get a mini Big Bang. Well, what the hell's a mini Big Bang? Bang created everything that is. What if a mini Big Bang is big enough to take out everything we can see? All the stars, all the planets, everything. What if? To go ahead, and we're going to do it anyway. And I think that's worth a few moments of thought, pondering. In a moment, I'll tell you more about Ed Pankow, who is a fascinating man, absolutely fascinating. There's much to say about him, and I will say it, and then we will speak with him.
Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999, on Art Bell's Somewhere in Time.
Now, Edmund J. Pankow is one of our nation's top 10 private investigators. Top 10. He has also become recognized as one of the most informed financial and asset recovery experts in the country. His expertise has prompted many clients in industry and government to utilize his investigative talent to document fraud, to locate and recover hidden assets. Pankow is also a best-selling author and renowned public speaker. In this, his fifth book, number 5, Hide Your Assets and Disappear, he's taken an about-face approach to his search and recovery techniques, techniques that he has taught to thousands at seminars and spelled out in fine detail in his bestseller. He is an associate editor of PI Magazine, a contributing writer to International Living, writes regularly for numerous financial and investigative trade journals, and authored several award-winning books on privacy and investigation, to include Everyone's Guide to Investigation, How to Make $100,000 a Year as a Private Investigator, and The PI Portfolio. All over the place. My show, of course, Joey Reynolds, G. Gordon Liddy, the NBC Nightly News, ABC's 2020, Larry King Live, ABC Nightline, BBC London, Geraldo Rivera, CNN, Your Money, CNBC Moneyline, Sally Jesse, I don't know, where hasn't he been? He has investigated now for 20 years some of the highest profile cases in the entire country. He's a graduate of the Florida State University School of Criminology, founder and director of Pankow Consulting, an international investigative agency headquartered in Houston, Texas. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Art.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. you are such an interesting person, and your job is so interesting. There are a lot of people, Ed, and I think I'll start here this time. From our last show, I can tell you, I got a million emails, and what people want to know is, how do they get into your business? What's it really like versus what the movies, you know, they paint a private investigator in a certain way, and it looks very romantic, kind of dangerous, and, you know, all of this romance and intrigue that everybody loves so much. So, is it like it is in the movies, Ed?
Well, in some ways it is, in some it isn't. If you do this business as I have for more than 25 years, yes, you get the romance, you get the intrigue, you get to investigate and look at some of the most interesting things in the world. But it is a business, and you've got to work at it like every other job. But this is a business that depends more on inspiration than perspiration. It's a business based much on common sense, but also having a very good generalist mind so you can look at things and get a good broad brush idea and know where to go for more information.
Well, here's, I guess, something that I would ask you and ask for a good, honest answer. Now, you've made it to the top of your field, and so your answer here, I understand, you know, that sometimes it can be like in the movies, very, very romantic and dangerous and intriguing and all of that, but then there's also the other depiction in the movies of the guy sitting in the little broken-down office, you know, with the shingle on the door and the gum-chewing secretary outside, and he's just sort of kicking back, taking a knock-off a fifth of whiskey, that kind of picture of a PI.
Well,
how many end up like that?
25 years ago, there were a lot of people like that. When I first got in this business, most private investigators were people that either got fired from the police department or they left under bad circumstances, and most of them were little one-man agencies, and they were just like Humphrey Bogart. But today, exactly. You've got people that come into the business from computing, from banking, from all types of other fields, and I've seen this business really grow up as a profession. And first off, now there's as many women private investigators as there are men.
Really?
Women are much more detail-oriented and make much better court record researchers.
Well, I bet they're also, in some cases, better as PIs, period, because when you're making a phone call and you're saying you're somebody from some credit agency or whatever it is you guys do to get information, why a woman, for some reason, seems much more trustworthy than a man with those kinds of questions, don't they?
Well, many times they do. And two, it depends on what kind of person you're talking to. I have a woman that works for me that has a voice that no man can hang up on. And as long as she'll talk, they'll listen and answer questions just for her voice.
I see. I understand. Believe me, I understand. And so that is her asset.
Exactly.
I imagine there's a kind of a, must be a kind of a shady side, too, at the lower echelons of your profession.
There has been, but again, it's really grown up a lot. The shady side, the people that did illegal acts or that lived on the edge of the law, many of them have either gone out of business, been closed up, or just can't get clients anymore because much of what we do shows up in court. Investigators now have to testify a lot to the findings.
Sure.
And, you know,
so in other words, the old picture of PIs busting down motel room doors, taking a picture and running, not so true anymore, or still true?
Well, rarely. But as I say, 25 years ago, I did some of that myself.
Did you?
Today, much more of our work is either done on computer, or it's done with an attorney, you know, developing evidence for court or putting together more factual information.
Well, in the NFL, if you're a wide receiver, speed counts. And I would think knocking down a motel door, taking a picture, speed would count.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You have to have the car engine running. You've got to have that camera loaded and ready to run.
Well, it must... I imagine you could probably tell some colorful stories from your beginnings, eh?
Oh, it's something. I look back on the 25 years I've been in business, and you name it, we've done it.
I'll bet. Same way with me. You name it, and I've done it. It's been a roller coaster ride for sure. Anytime you near the top of your field, whatever it is, you collect some pretty good stories, to be sure. And I don't want a lot of comment on it, but Ed, I can't resist. I was so blown away earlier today. This statement, I'm involved in litigation, and there is a statement that was made by the other side's legal team, and put up on a website by one of the litigants. And you read that statement, I take it.
I did.
Do you have any comments you wish to make on it at all?
Well, there's a couple of things, you know. The first thing is they said the judges are insulted with affidavits.
Oh, yes.
And really, affidavits are the backbone of a lot of court cases because it gives, in one person's own words, their knowledge of the fact.
Of course.
And judges use affidavits every day, particularly for what's called summary judgment motions, to show that there's an independent third party and that they say X, which supports Y. And, you know, I give affidavits all the time whenever I testify or whenever I put together my information so that it gives both the court and the other side a preliminary indication mm-hmm. of what they're going to face if they go to court.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, affidavits turn frequently into depositions.
Very often they will. Basically, that's a good snapshot for the meat of what people are going to tell if they are deposed.
So judges generally are not insulted by affidavits.
Oh, no. In fact, it's one of the ways that they can look at a case and determine should this go forward or not, or is this worth the court's time or not.
Uh-huh. And to characterize the ones who signed affidavits in the manner that they apparently have been characterized here, really shocking. I couldn't believe it. I guess these are the... Anyway.
Well, there's a couple things. First off, you know, this paralegal is basically insulting them and trying to contaminate them as potential witnesses, and there's also an implied threat in there in that, you know, they can now get their divorce settlements, their tax returns, their social security numbers, if a person gives an affidavit.
It even says also their bowel habits.
Ah, yes. Yes, we're talking anal retentive here. Yes.
Oh, man, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Anyway, that's something for us to deal with. I take it you've probably seen that and worse in the work you do.
Oh, yeah. As I say, this goes with the territory, but the one comment I was going to make is if a person gives an affidavit and the other side wants to depose them, they can depose them, but they basically have to stick to the issues, not go in. They can't bring in their tax returns just because they gave an affidavit.
Mm.
Unless the affidavit has got something pertinent to do with their tax returns, it just can't be done.
This same paralegal who wrote this thing went on Mr. Oates' radio show talking about the litigation, and I wrote a book called The Art of Talk, which is, an autobiography about myself.
Yeah, read the book.
Oh, you did. Well, she said something roughly like this, that Art Bell, what kind of man would attack his sister with a shovel, leaving a permanent scar upon her nose? And, you know, that's true. That's in my book. But, see, that's where she stopped, you know. And, actually, if you keep reading the incident, you find that the incident occurred in a sandbox when I was, I think, maybe 5 and my sister was 3 or 4. No, she would have been 3. And so she leaves out that part. And so it sounds like as a full-blown adult, I went after my sister with a shovel. Oh, my God, what kind of man is this? This is the kind of thing we've been getting from the other side. I was in a sandbox, Ed, when I was 5.
Oh, yeah. Well, as to say, people that fight the legal battles outside the courtroom are just asking for trouble, and also they incur personal liability by doing so, and also, you know, can subject their firm, if the firm has knowledge and allows this, they can incur liability themselves. They can, you know, instead of being a witness, be a defendant.
Well, there are some very reputable people who signed these statements, very reputable, who might not take too kindly to this, but so be it. Ed, hold on. We'll get back to you in a moment. We're headed toward the bottom of the hour. Yeah, these things you must see for yourself, folks. They're on my website under Tonight's Show. So just go check it out for yourself, and you can characterize it the way you want. Remember, you can get hold of me at Art Bell at mindspring.com.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Far, we've been traveling far. Without a home, but not without a star.
Rock-a-bye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. So rock-a-bye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, well, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jumps over the candlestick. He jumps so high up above, he landed in the cradle of love. Well, rock-a-bye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. So rock-a-bye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon, and on her way down, she met a turtle dove, said, let's go rocking in the cradle of love. Well, rock-a-bye baby in the treetop.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
You watch. You'll find this song rattling around in your mind irresistibly soon. It takes about three or four exposures, and then you're hooked.
Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Now, look at this from Anchorage, Alaska, all the way from Alaska. Ed, your book, you might like to know, somebody just checked and faxed me, at Amazon.com in Alaska right now, is the number one selling book in the whole state.
All right.
Did you know that?
Well, it was actually, after my first show with you, it was number one in the nation.
Really?
Oh, yes. We were number one.
It came from what to number one?
Well, it was probably at number 110 or something like that.
From 110 to number one?
Right, in just this one day. In fact, I got 75,000 web hits on my site at www.pankow.com the day after I did my first show with you.
Whew.
Well,
this must be one heavy book. And why do you think, I mean, let's face it, the title of your book is Hide Your Assets and Disappear. Are there really that many people who would like to hide what they've got and just blink out?
There really is. This is an idea whose time has come.
Apparently.
There are a lot of people that, first off, want to just drop out of society. They've just had it, and it's really interesting. The information overload that's been caused by all of the things related to computers and technology and everything else.
Oh, are you right?
Has literally doubled the suicide rate. And it's most obvious in Australia and New Zealand because
really?
They've been exposed to our technology in a couple years where we've had 20 years to get used to it.
So Australians and what was the other?
New Zealanders have the highest suicide rate and the highest incidence of serial killers in the world.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Australia has the highest
incidence. Now, I thought we had the highest rate of serial killers.
Not percentage-wise. Percentage-wise, Australia beats the United States, and, you know, we're like number two.
That's amazing. And here I thought all this time we were the worst.
Well, we're worse, but we've got a lot bigger numbers. But Australia,
per capita,
percentage-wise,
per capita,
is a gut bias.
Oh, that's amazing. And so a lot of people just, they've had it. There's an overload, whatever it is in society. They're sick of dealing with people. They want to start a new life. They want to erase their old life. They want to take the money and run.
Exactly. There's people that read books like Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, and they say, I want to be John Galt.
Yeah.
I want personal freedom. I want financial freedom. I don't want the cheese. I just want out of the trap.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I noticed in some of the materials that were sent to me about you since our last show that you have been commenting on somebody who disappeared recently but is not doing a real good job of it. what was that all about?
Well, over the past year, there's been a lot of articles published and a lot of stuff done about this guy, Marty Frankel, that stole somewhere between $350 million and possibly as much as $1 billion.
Ooh.
By defrauding insurance companies.
That's a lot of money.
It really is. It may be the largest individual financial fraud in the history of the United States and possibly the world. We don't know yet.
So Marty's on the lam.
Oh, yeah. And Marty, left the United States. He went to Spain. He went to Italy. And he's just been walking around the streets of Rome. And this is a guy who's not a rocket scientist. Every police agency in the world is looking for him. And he's sitting at these little coffee shops and using cell phones to call all over.
Really?
And try to figure out what he's going to do.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about disappearing, but even I know that you should go to countries that won't send you back. In other words, last show we talked about Belize, and I think there are some other countries in Central or South America that are pretty good that way. And what are the good countries, by the way, besides Belize, the tropical paradise one may disappear to? And we'll talk about Belize. What other countries are good to go to, and what are bad countries to go to?
Well, suppose he's in Europe, which is what we know to be true. The very best place for Marty Frankel would be Austria. Because Austria does not have an extradition treaty with the U.S. and many other countries, particularly for financial crimes.
Mm.
These places view tax evasion as a sport, not a crime.
A sport.
It's a way of life. And basically, once you get in their country, it's like in the Middle Ages, you could go and take shelter and refuge in a church, and nobody can pull you out.
And they give you shelter and refuge.
Exactly. And they can stay there. They can figure out what they're going to do.
Yeah, but what about political pressure? I mean, couldn't it be that somebody, if we want somebody badly enough, that our State Department or whoever does this kind of thing does a bunch of back-channel pressure and, you know, he's whisked out in the middle of the night or something like that?
Well, that may happen, but it takes weeks and months to do that. And in the meantime, he could decide to go to Estonia or Moldavia, which would also welcome him with open arms.
Really?
I mean, you know, you get a man that says, I'll deposit $50 million in your banks if you'll let me stay here a while. Meyer Lansky, the great international financial criminal, he did this. Back in the early 1970s, he donated $10 million to a university in Israel.
You're talking about one of the founding fathers now of a city very close to me. So
oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Meyer.
But good old Uncle Meyer offered to deposit $100 million in banks if they would let him stay in Israel.
You mean to say bankers are like that, Ed?
Oh, listen, money talks, and, you know, bull walks. That's the way it goes.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah, so the Israelites, the bankers there said, thank you very much. And then how do the bankers influence the politicians who might otherwise cave and send you back? How's that done?
Well, most politicians are attorneys. Attorneys are among the most, shall we say, financially motivated people in the world. I guess that I could safely say that.
You can safely say that, and I'd agree with you, yes.
Yeah, and attorneys are the ones that make the laws. Why? Because we elect attorneys to be politicians. And
I never thought of it that way.
Well, it just kind of works out that way. There's more politicians that are lawyers than probably everything else put together. Mm. But here somebody comes to a country, says, I'll deposit, you know, serious money if you will allow me to stay. Well, the bankers have their own lobbyists. The lobbyists talk to the lawyers. The lawyers talk to the politicians, and wonderful things happen.
Yes. Well, now, here's a question for you. You said how much money? $500 million to $1 billion, somewhere?
Right. There's somewhere between $350 million to $1 billion. Plus, he's walking around with gold bars and as much as $10 million worth of diamonds.
Really?
On his body.
On his body.
Yeah, if one of the
that
bad guys...
That doesn't seem like a safe thing to
people,
do. I mean, you can get knocked over in New York City for $20.
Oh, yeah, and this is what I'm saying. Marty Frankel should fear thugs and basically the bounty hunters who will bag him for the diamonds much more than the FBI and Interpol. Because if they get him, he's not going to be arrested. He's going to be vacuumed and put at the bottom of the river.
Vacuumed, yes. Yes, vacuumed. Now, there have been a lot of people who have shifted monies like this around, and I've always wondered how they do it. Exactly, how do you move, say, $100 million? How the hell do you do that?
Many ways. First off, you do what Marty did, and you buy something small that you can carry on your body that has great value, like diamonds and jewelry.
Yes.
That's one thing.
So he wasn't dumb there, in a way. Okay.
The other thing is he takes money, cash, and puts it in different banks in different parts of the world.
Right.
So when he has access to it or needs access to it, he can get it through an international MasterCard or Visa. He can have
really?
A Visa card issued on the Isle of Man's bank and use it anywhere in the world.
And, really?
Unless somebody knows what the name of the account is in, they won't be able to tie it to him.
Uh-huh. So really, he's okay, except for the fact that there he is in Italy, as you said, in a little coffee shop or something. And were he to be apprehended there, I take it the jig would be up.
Well, maybe and maybe not. Again, there's not even, to my knowledge, an arrest warrant for him in Italy. If he was arrested in Italy, first off, the local police would have to make a command decision. Mm-hmm. Do I take $10,000 in American money and walk away?
A command decision.
You know, or do I arrest him? And if I do arrest him, what is the charges? And then he hires an attorney, and an attorney says basically, what charges do you have? If not, you got to let him post a bond, another $10,000, and let him go walk.
And Marty is on a plane.
That's right. Marty is out of there. So, you know, it's just one big catch-22 or boondoggle the way it's going right now.
Now, Marty should have talked to you before he took off, huh?
Well, I have heard a rumor that they found a copy of my book in his house.
Really? Well, true then story. Why the hell didn't he read the whole thing?
He's emotionally a basket case. I mean, you take a man that has stolen this much money,
yeah,
a man that has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying 10 Mercedes, buying
ten
one
Mercedes.
House for $3.5 million cash, another house for $1 million cash, and the pressure of knowing that the government is looking for him.
Yeah.
And you're not talking about Mr. Stability in the first place. You're talking about somebody that lost his securities license and has screwed everything up he's ever done in his life. This is the first thing he's ever worked out right.
So it's like he needs mounted mirrors so he can look behind him.
That's right.
Oh.
And he's having these women companions literally go out and do his errands and run his daily activities right now.
Speaking of women, I'm sure he's not wanting in that category.
With that kind of money, you can look awful handsome awful quick, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so much for Marty. What do you think will happen? I mean, do you think they'll get him?
Well, one of two things is going to happen. As I say, the bad guys are going to bag him, and they'll find his body someday at the bottom of the canal. Or he's going to just emotionally run himself to such a point where he just gives up, or they find him making one of the stupid moves that he's making every day, like calling his mother back in the U.S. They'll be able to figure out where he is from calls like that.
And but, for that kind of money, I would think that all kinds of things could happen. I mean, you could be on a plane overnight. Whoosh.
Sure. But the thing is, he doesn't know who to trust. And he's in such a circumstance that he doesn't trust anybody. He doesn't speak the foreign language. And the only people he trusts are his bimbets that follow him around.
Mm-hmm.
If he had somebody that was competent, that was could provide security and also handle the daily activities, he'd be a fugitive the rest of his life. Nobody would ever find him. Nobody would ever catch him. And he could live the life he wants.
A golden parachuted fugitive.
Exactly.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. You could consider that to be a horrible life, or I guess depending on how you think about things, it might not look so bad.
Well, there's a lot worse circumstances.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's really true. So now let's focus back upon the relatively common man. A lot of people in America, I mean, this is a very prosperous country right now, and there are a lot of people who have made a considerable amount of money, and they're just sort of fed up, either with the overload of information or litigation or all the crap that's going on today, and they've got a spouse they want to get the hell away from, some shrieking, screaming, horrid witch of a woman, and they want to get away, or whatever it is, for whatever reason they want to split with the Bucks. What are the... We've just talked about Marty, and I guess these are pretty much the wrong things to do, but how about what are the right things to do?
Well, the right thing to do first is to make a plan. You've got to say, all right, I want out, and you ask yourself some questions.
Okay.
Number one is, do I need good medical facilities? If so, you want a country with good medical facilities.
Right.
Do I like the weather hot? Do I like the weather cold?
Weather. That's important. Yeah.
The next thing is, does this country have extradition, and have they signed the MLAT, the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, which says if you smoke one marijuana cigarette and inhale, then, you know, the government can reach in and touch you.
So in other words, technically, then Bill Clinton's still okay even if he took off.
Well, you know, he's admitted he smoked one marijuana.
Yeah, but he didn't inhale.
Well, that's right. That's right. I forgot that. Yeah.
So you did say inhale.
Yeah, he got to inhale. But basically, you know, he could go to a country like Belize. He could go to one of a number of Latin American or former European countries like Moldavia and Estonia, and they will let him live there. They will not extradite him unless it's a capital crime. And
okay, so let's talk about Estonia. What kind of life in Moldavia or Estonia could one have?
Well, you could have a great life. I mean, here you've got a country that's a former Soviet republic.
Right.
It's hurting for hard dollar currency.
Right.
It's a beautiful country. It looks much like Switzerland did 20 years ago.
The weather?
The weather's not bad, you know. It's got skiing in the winter. You've got nice stuff in the summer. This is where all the Russian politicians and KGB had their winter homes. And there are thousands of women there that don't care if you've got a Mercedes. They don't care if you have a Rolex. They just want to know that you have a stove.
So, in other words, if you do have a Mercedes and you've got a watch, you're saying there are,
well, that, you know, in those countries, if you've got money, if you've got the ability to provide a good lifestyle, there are thousands that would just, you know, jump right in your lap and say, I'm yours. You know, I don't, you know, I'll take whatever you got. And you could live there on basically 25 cents on the dollar of what it would cost here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And see, many of these countries, they're now getting a great deal of American expatriates because you and I couldn't retire on the money that Social Security is going to give us.
No, indeed not.
But you could take that money and go to Honduras. You could go to Belize. You could go to Argentina. You could go to Dominica. You could go to Moldavia.
Still get your Social Security check, right?
Oh, yeah. They'd mail it to your U.S. bank. The U.S. bank, you give them wiring instructions to send it somewhere else. And basically, that money would go three times as far as it would in the United States.
So your quality of life would be 300% better.
Exactly. And you would have the ability to live with dignity, where here you'd just be sitting there waiting for your duck to die.
Yeah. That's amazing. So it's not just the rich ones or the well-off ones, but even just the middle or even low, fairly low-income people can profit significantly in lifestyle, and that is what counts, after all, by doing as you suggest. Is that about right?
That's what you can do. And there's large American communities today in Guadalajara, in Belize, in Costa Rica.
So you wouldn't be alone.
Yeah, you'd done just this, and that's it. You'd have hundreds of other Americans. You can pick up a local newspaper called the Tico Times, and they advertise for members of the opposite sex to just come live with them down there.
Hold on, Ed. You see now why this book is so popular, right? It's called Hide Your Assets and Disappear. You can get it just about anywhere, including my website. If you'll just click on Ed Pankow's name, it'll take you over to Amazon.com. You can get your copy on the way. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Worldwide humiliation.
Oh, goodbye, cruel world. I'm off to join the circus. You're gonna be a broken-hearted clown. Paint my face with a good-for-nothing smile. Cause a mean, fickle woman turned my whole world upside down. Farewell to love, I'm off to join the circus. Gotta find a way to hide my tears. Bet I'll have them rolling in the aisle, and I'll forget that woman if it takes 100 years. Oh, 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 step right up and take a look at a fool. He has got a heart as stubborn as a mule. Come on, everybody, he's good for a laugh. And no one could tell his heart is broken in half. Well, the joke's on me. I'm off to join the circus. Oh, Mr. Barnum, save a place for me. Shoot me out of a cannon, I don't care. Let the people point at me and stare. I'll tell the world. Wherever she may be, that mean, sickle woman made a crying clown out of me.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 25th, 1999.
I thought this would go well with the current topic in mind, and Ed Pankow here. A mean woman. Yes. Anyway, how does Belize look to you folks? We'll ask a little bit about Belize in a moment.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Even though I think the middle class is being eroded away because most people are doing relatively okay, we haven't seen that balance of power shift yet. If that gets higher, I think we got a real problem.
I don't see governments being supportive of this kind of rising up of people asserting their frustrations. We're looking at a very historic time beginning to emerge right now.
Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Ed Pankow, and we were talking about Estonia and countries there. But Belize really is a pretty spiffy country because it's a tropical climate, I guess, isn't it?
It is. It's, you know, very much like you'd get in Florida or California.
Well, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. It may be even a little bit better than... What's the summertime mean average, do you know?
Well, it's probably in the mid-80s. But the thing is, if you don't like it that hot, you just go up in the mountains a little bit, and the temperature drops 8 or 10 degrees.
Sounds nice. There have been rumors. Now, this may be further down in South America or other Central American countries, but a lot of Americans have a mental image of these countries, Ed, as unstable, countries that are constantly going from one dictator to another, and you might not be safe, you might get kidnapped, a lot of terrible things might happen to you. So how about crime down in Belize?
Well, crime in Belize, Honduras, Costa Rica, most of the Central American countries, is very minimal. There's petty theft and things like this because they still are economically depressed, but all of the real violent crime has faded away to a great degree ever since the Russians no longer sent money to the Cubans to stir up trouble and basically pay for, you know, the guerrilla warfare. These countries have gone through a real renovation. First off, they bought all the guns that were out there. They said, if you people will turn in guns, we'll pay you money. And they brought in everything from hand grenades to howitzers. The next thing that went on was that they realized that the one salvation for these countries was to get the American and European retirees, which both raised real estate prices, provided jobs, and brought people in with hard dollars. So crime is much lower than it is in our major cities in the United States.
Isn't that something? And the lifestyle that you could lead there on, let's say you went down there and you had $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations could you have for a lifestyle?
Well, if you went down there with $500,000, you could live like a king, because while your money would only get 3.5% or 4% in a bank here,
yes,
down there in many countries they pay 9% to 12% interest if you invest in American dollars, and they pay as high as 24.9% if you invest in the local currency, the lempira.
Holy moly.
So, you know, there's a lot of opportunities, and even if you had $100,000 and it drew $10,000 to $12,000 or $15,000 a year interest, you could live off that very comfortably.
Would you end up with an American style or a Western style house? What's available? I don't know anything about Belize.
Well, you'd get a very similar house to what they have in South Florida. Basically, it's a house with a regular inner living core with a big outside patio. A lot of the houses don't have air conditioning, but they've got, you know, just good patios and breezeways. So it wouldn't be exactly like you would expect here, but very similar, and it'd be more adapted to their lifestyle and to their living conditions.
How big is Belize?
Belize is a very small country. It's probably the size, well, it's actually, I think, smaller than Maine, but it's a small country. It's part of what used to be British Honduras, which encompassed most of Belize and the country today of Honduras, which is much larger than Belize.
So, all in all, what about the government?
Governments are very stable. They're former British colonies, so they follow the British system of law. They don't have petty dictators. They don't have problems. They don't have the currency devaluations that we've seen in Mexico and Ecuador.
Right.
And basically, it's very much like living in a former British colony.
And yet they offer those kind of interest rates. So what about inflation?
Inflation really hasn't hit there yet. Costa Rica.
Why are there such big interest rates then? Normally, when you run into those kind of interest rates, the inflation rate is tremendous.
Well, the inflation rate is not that big because there's a lot of activity going on. The reason that the interest rates are so high is they don't have the infrastructure for lending like we do in the United States. I mean, we make an art form of lending money.
Oh, yes.
These other countries don't have the long-term financing that we specialize in, and they loan short-term money. So if you wanted to build a house or some apartments, the interest rate for borrowing there is much higher. It's like 30%. So you don't fiddle with it and build a home that takes 6 months. You do it in 2 months, so you get much better and quicker use of your money.
It really does sound like a kind of a tropical paradise. Is that a fair assessment?
To many people, it is. If you expect to live in the United States or have every one of the same amenities, you're not going to have that. The telephone may be out for a day or two. The electricity from time to time does go out. If you get a satellite, you've got your cable television, but they don't have all of the modern amenities. But it's a different lifestyle. It's a slower pace, and the people there live an average of 4.8 years longer than they do here in the U.S.
You're kidding. I thought we had a much higher, and they live longer than we do, huh?
Yeah, especially Costa Rica. Costa Rica is known as the Switzerland of the Caribbean. They have a higher literacy rate than the U.S.
Right.
Their people live longer, and their quality of life is so much better than we've got here. It's just...
See, people don't believe that. Now, I've been to a lot of areas in the world. For example, the Greek islands. I've been to a lot of the Greek islands, and they are... Oh, my God, they're incredible. I mean, just beautiful, like Patmos, for example. I don't know if you've ever been to Patmos.
Not yet.
But the quality of life there is... Mwah. Now, I don't know about the cost of living. It may be high, but, boy, the quality of life is just... here's something else I want to ask you about. You're an expert in this area. The Cayman Islands have been a traditional haven for people to put money. I saw something the other day that suggested that there was one super-duper court case that was going to get somehow possibly threaten all of the people who have these secret little accounts in the Caymans, have their names suddenly exposed.
Well, what happened there?
Oh, you do know about that.
I know about this.
All right.
A financial money manager, we'll call him, somebody that used to be a banker that now offers up services for individuals that want to hide their money outside the U.S.
Right.
Was grabbed by the IRS, and they offered him the opportunity to be a witness or a co-defendant. So rather than go to jail, he turned in his 1,500 clients. And the IRS has already collected $50 million, and they say they're going to collect as much as $300 million
oh my God.
Just on the information he's providing about clients. And, you know, in my book, Hide It All or Hide Your Assets and Disappear, I tell people, don't have someone else do this for you because three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. You can open your own bank account. You can have
In other words, if you're going to do this, take your own money to wherever you're going to take it and open your own account.
Exactly. You don't want somebody doing it for you just for this reason that if they get caught, they'll say, no, no, you don't want me. You want the bigger fish.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Ed, and you can comment on it, and I'm not going to say who it is, but I had counsel from an acquaintance who said, you ought to take this money and put it in the Caymans, in a bank account. And it was explained to me how it was done through a third party. And, you know, it was said to be safe, safe, safe. And I always said to the person, well, you know, what about this third party? I swear to God this is true. I decided I don't play that kind of game. I am an American citizen, and I don't cheat on my taxes, number one. I pay my taxes. I grumble and bitch a lot about it, but I pay them. And I felt like it was cheating my own country. And I know that's, to the people who do this, it's very naive. But that's the way I feel. At any rate, when it was discussed, I said, yeah, but, you know, how can you trust this person who's handling the money for you? Because basically, the money comes and goes at their behest. Their signature transfers the money. What stops them from taking your money?
Well, it can be done. That's why you don't want to relinquish control of your money. And, you know, this kind of program is not for people that are just trying to hide money from the U.S. This is for people that very legitimately have worked here, that pay taxes, that want to look forward to retirement or to move their money outside the jurisdiction of U.S. courts. See, one of the problems is anybody with $102.50 can file a lawsuit.
So, yep, yep, yep.
You know, you know the drill.
How well I know, yes.
And they can tie up your assets. They can deny you the ability to use your own money to defend yourself by making up affidavits and false statements. And a court can tie up your assets and freeze them for 2 or 3 years while this all gets sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
So if your money's outside the United States, outside the jurisdiction of U.S. courts, it's making a lot better interest, plus some dirtbag lawyer that's trying to, you know, make himself a 40% fee of whatever you have,
mm-hmm.
can't put his hooks in the money and is going to be not very motivated to pursue a case that he can't see the pot of gold at the end of
okay,
the tunnel.
Okay, but if it is known that the account is there, then he can do it or
no,
not?
No, he can't.
Oh, he can't. So, in other words, the only people really in trouble from this guy turning over all these names are the people not who legitimately have the money there, tax already paid, but people who have secreted the money over there without having paid tax on it. Yes?
Yes. Those people that made cash money or whatever or had money that they never declared the income on, and it's now there and they're not declaring the interest as well. So the government can go back on them and say, you did not pay the interest on your income, you did not report all your income, you are now a candidate for the Criminal Investigative Division of the IRS, which is not a nice place to be.
No. No. So I guess then, will that collapse everything in the Caymans, or is it just big trouble for these 1,500 people or however many?
Well, the first thing is it makes trouble for those 1,500, but the second thing is it gives the IRS a good look at what's going on in the 460-some banks in the Cayman Islands.
Oh, they know damn well what's going on.
Well, to a good degree they do. But see, now the Cayman Islands has signed a treaty called the MLAT, the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, and they will provide financial information if... you're involved in money laundering, if you're involved in drugs, if you're involved in a capital crime.
Ah.
So if the government can show that this money was made through laundering, and the definition of laundering is so loose that basically taking any money that you make and removing it from the court's jurisdiction and moving that money to avoid other matters, they can consider that money laundering as well. So it really strikes a real blow against all of the setup of the Cayman Island banking system.
I see. That's the way it was written, and I went, wow.
Yeah, well, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago and said this is going to really put a big dent in the Cayman Island banking infrastructure because people are going to move their money from the Cayman Islands to places that have not signed the MLAT, places that haven't become so well-known and public in recent years.
But how do you know that whatever country you might choose would not, you know, 2 years after you put your money there, sign the, whatever you just called it, the NLAP?
Right.
Would sign that, and suddenly there you are, bare naked.
Well, you don't know, but the thing is, if you read the newspaper, if you keep abreast of rules, you're going to see that a country is either considering that or your banker, say if you've got your money in the Cook Islands, which is out in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific.
Sure is.
The local banker's going to tell you, oops, our government is considering passing this law. We have a branch in the Isle of Man. We suggest you move your money there.
Now, there you go. I've heard good things about the Isle of Man.
Isle of Man has very protective laws. The Turks and Caicos Islands have very protective laws.
What I've heard, yes. But you say, again, now coming back to this, you don't recommend a third party.
I really don't, because there's too many opportunities for them to get greedy. And when you let someone else manage your money, they start to think of it as their money.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really bothered me. And I tried to talk this person out of it, and they went ahead and did it anyway. That's their business. But I wouldn't do such a thing. Now, you're saying, though, for example, the Isle of Man. Now, I always thought, if you're going to open your own account, how do you do that? Because you can't really move more than 10 grand at a time or carry it with you, can you? Isn't it something about $10,000 limits now with the IRS?
The law allows you to take $10,000 per person per trip out of the country without declaring it. You can carry more, but you've got to say this is for business purposes. I've traveled out of the country many times with hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash.
Really?
But it was in relationship to my business. One of my clients leases the Russian Mir satellite to museums, and every year we have to bring them literally three gym bags full of $100 bills, fly to the Soviet Union, get off the plane, hand them the gym bags, get back on the plane, come back to the U.S.
You're kidding! Gym bags full of money?
Last trip was $600,000.
Oh, my God. $600,000 taken in, you know, you're talking now about a country where they'll knock you off for your passport.
The people that meet you at the plane have enough stroke to make sure that doesn't happen. They are the guys that run the country.
I've heard that, Ed. I've heard that. All right, hold on. Stay right there. Ed Pankow is my guest. His book, which I'm sure you really want to read, is Hide Your Assets and Disappear. You can go up to my website and click on Ed's name. It'll take you to Amazon.com where you can get the book on the way. If you're not intrigued, then you're just not listening. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
something inside that they need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard. And they use them to help us.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Hide Your Assets and Disappear is the book, and I see why it's selling so well. We've got the author of it here, Ed Pankow, and we are talking of many things. I've got a little, actually it's pretty nice. It's from somebody in the audience, faxed to me. Hi Art, I was in Tallinn, Estonia last summer. And I must say that it is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Imagine, if you will, a city straight out of the Middle Ages with all of the romantic appeal. It was an enchanting city with old, beautiful buildings and cobblestone streets. The people there were very friendly as well. It is the way that I always pictured Europe would be. I did not realize all of the things that Ed Pankow has mentioned about it when I was there. Ever since being there, I've wished to get back, and now that I know what I know, I shall. I advise all in your audience to go to Estonia if they get an opportunity. After hearing this, I certainly plan to get back there as soon as possible. Signed, Easy Street Dreamer in Phoenix. Easy Street Dreamer, that's a good handle.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Well, the caller was right. There was a 4.7 magnitude earthquake at Yuma. Yuma, Arizona. And it shook bottles and rattled stuff and so forth and so on. It occurred 6:04 a.m. on Tuesday morning. 4.7 in Yuma. Tornadoes in Alaska. Hurricanes marching across the Atlantic. These really are very, very interesting times we live in. Once again, the author of Hide Your Assets and Disappear, Ed Pankow. Hey, Ed, have you ever thought about doing that yourself?
Well, in a few years, I will probably do this. See, there's another benefit to living outside the U.S. If you declare your primary residence outside the U.S.,
yes,
your first $70,000 of income is tax-free.
Why would that be?
Well, our government says if you earn your money outside the U.S., you determined personally that this is going to be your primary residence,
yes,
and you're not, you know, using U.S. government services, well, then you get a deduction for that.
That's a pretty damn big deduction, $70,000 a year.
Not only for you, but your wife, your kid, and your dog.
Oh, my. And your dog.
Your dog, you know, he's on the payroll, too. But
you've arrived where you have arrived at it. So in other words, if you're in Belize, even your dog Fred gets a $70,000 deduction.
If you choose to do that, yes. Yeah. But basically, with my my wife and my son and myself, that's $210,000 a year.
That's a lot of money.
It's not chump change.
Yeah, not chump change is right. Well, you heard what the fellow said about Estonia. That sounds pretty nice, actually.
Oh, it's a gorgeous country.
There are some Americans who would say, hey, you know, this really sounds unpatriotic. To which you would say,
well, today it's a different world. I mean, many people live in one country, do business in a second country, and do their financial dealings in a third country.
Oh.
With communications and the world opening up, it's not like you live in one town or one country anymore. There's opportunities in other places that don't exist here. Our stock market is probably getting pretty top-heavy right now, at least I feel so. But there's other countries that need so many things and have got so many natural resources, but they don't have the technology that you could go, like, if you could get the contract to provide a phone system for Belize, you could rent a satellite shot, provide them with satellite service, and give everybody in the country a cell phone and become a multi-million dollar millionaire overnight.
Yeah, I guess that would go big. So they don't have cell phones there yet.
Well, they do, but they're these Iridium phones or other world cell phones.
The Iridium thing.
That's kind of, you know.
Iridium has not quite lived up to its rep.
It hasn't, but it's got the technology, and one day they or somebody using something similar is going to work.
Absolutely. And Iridium does work. As a matter of fact, I had a young lady on a mountain in Peru that I interviewed on an Iridium phone here about a month ago, and it worked very well. But somehow commercially, I think Iridium, I've heard they were filing Chapter 11 or something, and they're going to reorganize. And so they've had some difficulties, but it's a whole series, a constellation of satellites that's supposed to allow you to just, you know, use what seems like almost a cell phone virtually and make a call from the jungles of Brazil if you want to. And you can do that, right?
Well, it can be done, but what's really interesting to me is there are people running around the country saying that this is a government plot, that they're going to use this technology to implant little meta tags in our skulls and track us anywhere in the world.
Great. actually, that really is within our grasp now.
It is. The technology is there, but, you know, I don't think anybody's going to allow this to be done to them. Not in my lifetime.
Not my head. You don't.
That's right.
But that may be the horrid future we face, huh?
Potentially, that could be done.
All right.
The technology certainly is there.
Back to what we were talking about, taking $10,000, say, at a time out. Let's say you wanted to begin putting your money in a bank, say, in the Isle of Man.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to make trip after trip after trip, you and your wife taking $10,000 a piece out and putting it in the bank in the Isle of Man, or can you go once, establish the account, and then just wire the money over there?
You can go once, establish the account, have them tie it to a international MasterCard Visa, and from then on, do all your business with them through the Internet. In my book and on my new website, which is hideyourassets.com, I have a list of banks and other businesses that are user-friendly and do this kind of thing.
So, no cash goes anywhere. In other words, you get your money over there, you establish these international, what did you say, MasterCard and Visa accounts?
Right.
And then you just go nowhere without it, and that's your it's like your checkbook.
That's what it is. It's basically your bank account in your pocket, and it leaves no financial footprint in the United States, only in the country that holds the MasterCard Visa transaction record.
So in other words, if you go down to Walmart and you buy something and you present your international MasterCard, no problem, no trace,
because the record doesn't go to that big Cray computer in Phoenix, Arizona. It goes to one out of the country.
No kidding. Here's another question for you, and I'm just so full of questions. We just recently changed our currency, and you know, they did it ostensibly, they said, because of forgery of, you know, going on in Lebanon and so forth and so on. And so the currency is different now, and it has this little metal strip that runs down.
Yeah, a Mylar strip.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm told that border checkpoints and anybody else who has the technology can literally tell how much money you're carrying with you. Is that true?
Not yet. That technology is not in place today. It could be.
Would it come as a result of this little strip? In other words, would that eventually be something they could read at, you know, a few feet away?
I would say, again, not today, but if they, in the future, with a little better technology, could determine, you know, how much money it is, and also, you know, the presence of money like this, because once you can get computer chips down and something that's recognizable to any kind of a scanner down to that size, it's possible. But as I say, we don't have the technology today, and if you carry money through a computer checkpoint, it's not going to pick that up.
Not going to pick it up. All right. Well, let me tell you a little story. I was in Hong Kong, and I flew back from Hong Kong, and when our plane landed in San Francisco, we went through one of these horrors. We were on the ground. Oh, God. We were on the ground for a good hour and a half, and they wouldn't open the damn plane up and let us out. And everybody was wondering what was going on, and eventually some security guys rushed on board the airplane, grabbed three Oriental people, and whisked them off. And finally, the stewardess, the air crew, came and told us what it was. It was an Oriental family that had brought an entire shoebox, I say again, a shoebox full of high-denomination bills with them in their luggage. Now, apparently, this had been discovered in Hong Kong, but they didn't jump on them till they got to San Francisco.
Well, they didn't violate any Hong Kong law. They may not have violated any U.S. law, because I'm not sure of the Hong Kong law sending money, you know, sending money out, but bringing money into the United States.
Yeah, but there's a little form. Remember when before you land, that they always have you fill out about how much currency you're bringing in? Is there something about that?
Yeah, they ask that question. Mostly, and most countries have laws saying you can't take money out. It's like the Union of South Africa. You can travel anywhere you want, but they don't allow you to take a lot of money out because they're afraid you're just going to emigrate.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A lot of these countries, they'll let you travel, but they don't want you taking what they consider as their national treasure, which is your money, which you've earned out of the country.
Because you might immigrate, leave the country, and there goes your money.
Right.
And that's the reason for that law.
That's the reason for the law.
I'll be damned. I never knew that.
There's something new every day.
I guess so. But we, of course, being the land of the free and the fairly rich, we have no such law.
We don't have that law yet, but we do have the back door to that law through our tax code. And they're going to presume, it's like if you're in an airport,
right,
and you hear the announcement that says, warning, it is illegal to carry more than $10,000 cash out of the country,
right,
without reporting it,
right,
the only time they play that message is when they know someone's in the airport carrying that much money. And they make the announcement so that they'll have evidence in court that you're aware of that.
Well, how the hell do they know someone's in there with that much money?
Mostly informants, ex-wives, people that, you know, turn them in for a buck and things like that.
Oh, boy.
You know, the government doesn't really have all of the art and technology that people think they do. They still depend very heavily on informants. And more people get caught because of their ex-spouse, their ex-meaningful other, or something like this, than everything else put together.
And so they make the announcement, and then when you go through, they search and bust you.
Right.
So really disappearing, hiding your assets and disappearing properly is in itself an art form.
It is. You've got to have, you know, a checklist. You've got to have a plan. And if you follow the plan, it's no problem. If you go about it haphazardly, you're going to make mistakes.
Even one stinking little lonely moment of a phone call back home, and you could be cooked.
Exactly. Don't be like E.T. Don't phone home.
I wonder how many people actually ultimately make that mistake. Do you have any sense?
Well, a lot of them do. They get bored. They get sloppy. They back into the United States. We had a banker in Seattle, Washington,
mm-hmm.
that fled the U.S.,
right.
was living in Mexico, and he would talk to his spouse and everything else, and the government put what's called a PIN register on the phone, which told them not what his phone calls said, but what calls were incoming and outgoing from his wife's calls. So just before Christmas, they saw some telephone activity saying, okay, Mom is going to go meet him somewhere. So the government followed her, and she left Seattle, drove down to a border town across from Tijuana, Mexico.
Right.
And when he came across the border to see her, instead of her going across to see him, they introduced him to the ghost of Christmas past. And, you know, all his best laid plans all went to hell because he broke the rules.
But if you follow the rules, if you follow the plan, if you've read your book and you followed it, then you're going to have a whole new life, many times better than the life you have right now.
In many circumstances, yes.
When you speak, Ed, to large groups of people, of course you're speaking to one now, but you're not getting immediate feedback. We'll go to the phones here in the next hour. But, I mean, you're not getting the groans or the claps or the agreements or the disagreements. When you speak to a live group of people, how does all of this information hit them usually?
A lot of people just, it stuns them because they don't realize that such opportunities are there. And a lot of them, it's like pouring water in a sponge. They just soak it up and say, more, more, more.
Sure.
I did a seminar in Denver last weekend, and after the seminar, I got literally hundreds of emails, more information. How can I do this? How can I find out who's real? What's real?
Yeah.
And it's just, it does two things. Number one, it introduces them to a whole new way of thinking. And more than anything else, that's what this does. It tells them there's opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to take them today. You can think about them, but the opportunity is there.
Knowledge is power.
Yeah. Knowledge is power, and the more knowledge, more power. So people just wake up one day and say, the world is not what I thought it was. And
okay,
the other thing,
now let me teach you about email. What's your email address?
The best one is ejpankow@aol.com.
ejpankow, that's
P-A-N-K-A-U.
ejpankow, P-A-N-K-A-U, and that's all in lowercase, @aol.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now you'll find out about email.
Oh, listen, last time we did our show, it was like the Encyclopedia Britannica was waiting for me every morning.
Well, AOL has a maximum size mailbox of, I don't know, several hundred, you'll find it.
It'll be there.
It's
yeah.
going to be real full.
Well, I try to answer every email. I spend at
do
least
you, really?
An hour or two a day doing that every day.
Oh, how do you do it? How do you do it, Ed? I get now 600-700 emails every time I open my mailbox, and I'll tell people out there right now, it's a triage system, and I look at the subject header, and you better attract my attention in that, or it might not get read because it's not humanly possible.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did is I created a second website called HideYourAssets.com.
Right.
And I put answers to the most often asked questions and the best resources, like where to retire, where to go for international information, where to go for financial information. So I tell people, go to there first, and it'll give them some clues. And if you want to learn more, you either go to my www.pencow site for investigative information,
right,
or send me an email, and I do. I answer almost everyone because,
right,
in the years I've been in this business, I've made so many friends, and I've had so many people say, Ed, you literally saved my life.
All right. Well, here's your chance, folks. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to go to the phones. Email is ejpankau, that's P-A-N-K-A-U, at AOL.com. ejpankau at AOL.com. He's going to be writing for a while. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 9:29. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Where to find me? You know where to find Ed Pankau. You know where to find his book. Bookstores, I guess, nationwide. Amazon.com through my website. You can email him at ejpankau, all strung together, lowercase, ejpankau. K-A-U at AOL.com. And if you want to find me, you'll find me at Art Bell at Mindspring.com.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Even though I think the middle class is being eroded away because most people are doing relatively okay, we haven't seen that balance of power shift yet. If that gets higher, I think we got a real problem.
I don't see governments being supportive of this kind of rising up of people asserting their frustrations. We're looking at a very historic time beginning to emerge right now.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name. Coast Insider, you'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, here we go. Now, I promised you we would begin to take calls for Ed Pankow, who is one of our nation's top 10 private investigators, has authored Hide Your Assets and Disappear, one of 5 books, actually, that he's authored. And so we're going to do exactly that. If you have a question, we've covered a lot of territory, and there's a lot of territory that could be covered here, depending on what you would like to ask. We're now going to make him available, if that is okay with Ed. Ed.
That'll work.
That works for you?
That works for me.
All right. Let's see what's out there then. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Hello, Art. Hello, Ed.
Boy, I can barely hear you, sir. You're going to have to yell.
Hello, Art. Hello, Ed. Terrific show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have two questions. One of them is concerning personal, a little selfish, and the second one is about Y2K. First question, I'm 47 years old. I was married, got in a divorce, literally lost everything. We both lost. I was penniless. I'm starting.
The lawyers make money, yes.
Yeah, you know it, Art. I am now in my second career in real estate. I know I'm going to be doing well because that's what I was, sales was what I was doing before. Ed, the first question is, how do I hide a half of my income or one third of my income so that it's non-traceable, someplace where if something happens again, I can rely on that money? First question. The second question.
Well, no, wait a minute. That's a big question.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's a major question.
Right.
First off, it's hard to hide income because if it's reported by an employer, they know the fact how much you make. But once you cash your paycheck and everything else, if you just take a piece of it and just put it in a box, put it in a safe, put it in just under your mattress until you save up a couple $1,000s, then you take a nice little weekend trip, take one of these junkets or tours down to Belize, Honduras, any of these countries, and just open a bank account there and just keep putting your money there. Save up your money and then wire transfer it or mail them a cashier's check when you get enough, and that money will sit in the bank. It'll make 10 to 12% interest, and it'll be gone.
Great.
So that's the way to do that trick.
Y2K. We don't know what's going to happen on Y2K. A lot of people have been saying put a little bit of your money in cash and silver, Troy, Eagles, and things like that. What do you suggest a short term for the next few months trying to save some of our money should something happen in Y2K?
Well, what I'm doing is buying a diesel generator. I'm going to make sure I have at least 10,000 rounds of ammunition. And you can't eat gold. If things are really going to happen in Y2K, the things that you can eat and use to generate electricity and things like that are going to have a lot more value than gold.
What is your take on Y2K? I mean, here it is, close to September now, and we're getting such incredibly conflicting signals. Some people think that disaster, several months of disaster, people won't be able to get their money out of the banks. That's one side. The other side says, baloney, a hiccup, nothing's going to happen. What do you think?
We just don't know. We have no idea. The one thing that is good news, though, is that of all the compliant agencies or agencies that have got their act together, the IRS is not one of them. So,
yeah, you know, that was actually brought up the other night when I had Gary North on, that the IRS is not prepared for Y2K, and it may well be that they won't know who's paying taxes and who's not and who's supposed to, and what a mess.
Well, I wouldn't want to be having them owe me money at the end of the year. I'd much rather be owing them money.
That's a way to think about it.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Yes, I'm Dale Myers, and I've got a question for him. If I was to be looking for a person, how would I go about doing it on a fixed budget?
Well, the easy way to do it is to go to the free websites in the Internet, or go to your public library and use the free sites. I use a search engine called Dogpile, and by using that as a search engine instead of many of the others, it magnifies your effort. But either do that or go to the county courthouse and find identifiers on the people. Find their date of birth, their social security number, in voter registration records and marriage records and lawsuit mm-hmm. records. Once you've got someone's name or date of birth, you own them. Also, go to my website, www.tankau.com, and there's links for all the free searches for all of the Internet sites where you want to go and find people like Bigfoot, which gives you a printout of everybody in the country with that last name, with their address and phone number. So try that first.
All right. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Those Internet search engines are pretty good. Let me ask you a question, Ed. There are companies, and they'll be nameless, that are on the Internet that claim to go way beyond the free searches that are available on the Internet for people for $19.95, $39.95, whatever it is, charged to your credit card. They will supply you with all kinds of additional information that you can't get otherwise. Is that true or not true?
Most of them are a ripoff because they give you no more information that you can get for free by going to Bigfoot. The real databases that have information inexpensively are only available to attorneys, private investigators, and people in the business. There's a company called DBT Auto Track, and they have the best information in the country for the money available, but you as a general public can't buy it.
How come? I mean, why?
Because they provide credit information and other information, and they limit access to it because they've made a determination that they're going to police themselves and limit access rather than have the government do it.
Hmm. But
you can get it by
hiring a PI. But under the color of law, how does a private investigator have a right, or does he not have a right, to any greater level of information about somebody than Joe Blow?
Well, they don't have any greater right, but the companies that sell the information, their policy is, and it's no law or anything else, it's their policy, and they quote the Fair Credit Reporting Act as a means of restricting access to their information.
Huh.
Now, they can't restrict access to public information, and public information is publicly available, just they have a more accessible port, but they don't have to give you access unless they want to.
Interesting. How many things like that are private investigators, similar privileges do PIs have that the average person on an information search would not have?
Well, there's very few that they actually have the privilege to join that a public person or average Joe Blow doesn't have access to, but
mm-hmm.
most of all, they have the knowledge of where to go. Private investigators in general don't spread that knowledge, and so the average person doesn't know about a lot of the free sites, or they don't know about places they can go where they can type in an email address and it'll tell who owns that email address. But since we do this every day for a business, we know that you can go to the PI mall, put in someone's web address, and it'll tell who owns it.
Wow. There's not a lot of privacy left, is there, Ed?
There really isn't. There's a balance, usually, between security and privacy, and that balance has tipped very far to the side of making information public. The one thing is the public doesn't realize that their electronic signature does not belong to them, and it's worth thousands of dollars. Credit card companies, marketing companies, automobile
right.
companies
right.
know the value of your electronic profile, and they buy it and sell it and use it every day. But it's not yours because you don't own it.
What a nice new, brave new world, huh?
Oh, hey, it's a wonderful place out there.
Welcome to the Rockies. You're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, where are you?
I'm calling from, I'm listening to KOB in Albuquerque.
Right.
Yeah, well, when one considers Belize or a similar tropical area, what unusual disease problems might you encounter, such as maybe the prevalence of malaria or dengue fever, which about 2 years ago I noticed had caused many illnesses in Costa Rica, even in the San Jose area?
Okay, well, you know, that's a great question, because the first thing you listed as a thing you should consider is medical.
Yeah. Well, you want to definitely get a tetanus shot. I would recommend a malaria shot and also a yellow fever shot. You can go to the website of the U.S. Health Department, and they'll tell you for particular countries, get this or get that. But I would definitely get the malaria treatment. My mother-in-law, she's been living down there for 4 years. She loves it down there. I told her, get the malaria shot. She didn't do it. She got a very mild dose, but it's, you know, something
malaria's
that stays
bad.
With you forever.
I went to Africa, and when I went to Africa, I had to – it wasn't shots, thank God. But they give you these pills, and you've got to take them for like, oh, I can't remember. My wife would know it. It was 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, you just had to keep taking them and taking them. Horse pills, too.
Oh, yeah.
But so that's a consideration. For example, in Belize, you might want to update your shot record, find out what's going around down there, and get shots before you go.
Listen, ounce of prevention is worth a fifth of cure.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Betty from Staten Island, New York.
Hello, Betty.
Hi. First, I want to mention something. What I saw yesterday described as very clear and blue. And all day long, there was these long white lines, and two times I saw an X.
All right, well, this is, you're talking about contrails. Now, this is for a different show, hon.
Right, all right. So, for your guest, I wanted to know, we're not allowed to take too much money out of our country, right?
But yet $10,000 per person per trip.
Right, but the president is taking out billions of dollars.
Oh, this is a political complaint about foreign aid?
Yes.
Well, I don't know that...
That's not his personal money, so he can get away with that. It's yours and mine, unfortunately.
That's right. That's the answer, and that goes across borders totally unhindered.
Really, they couldn't. They'd have to fill Air Force One with as much money as he gives away.
That's right. A wild card line. You're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Okay, this is Ben again from Oregon City.
Ben again?
Yeah.
What do you mean again?
Oh, from last night.
I Ben again. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How Y2K ready are these countries, or how they affect you?
Oh, all right. In other words, for example, Belize.
Belize, Honduras, and other countries really have very little in the way of computer systems, so they're not going to be troubled by this. The only thing I would recommend is I wouldn't fly within 3 or 4 days before Y2K or 3 or 4 days afterward, because their radar screens may go out, and your pilot will be flying blind. But that could happen anywhere in the world, but particularly in third world countries.
I really like the communist Chinese solution to this, and I thought it was very intelligent. The communist Chinese government has ordered that every single last one of their airline executives will, in fact, be on a flight at midnight on New Year's Eve.
That'll wake them up, yeah.
Well, I think it's caused them to pay some attention, definitely, to the safety of flight in China.
That's one way to address the problem.
It's the way they're addressing it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Ed.
How you doing?
Hi, this is Kurt in Milwaukee.
Yes.
I emailed Ed a few weeks ago. It's about a student loan garnishment.
In other words, you took out a student loan, and now they're garnishing your
pay. Yeah, it was like several years ago, and I've been trying to pay it back whenever I could, but I have other loans and whatnot. But anyways, without any warning, I had 10% of my paycheck taken out, and the employer told me nothing. I got nothing you know, no court orders or anything like that. I guess something has changed in the last year or so.
Last October, they changed the law.
Really?
Basically, now they have got you by your family best, and you literally can't dismiss this in bankruptcy. You can't get any kind of deviation. They cut a deal with the banks that financed these student loans and said, you're going to get paid no matter what. Otherwise, nobody would have taken any of these student loan monies. But because they're guaranteed, because they can do garnishment without court, you know, this is now the biggest money maker the banks have in the country.
How can they do that, Ed?
They're the government, and they're here to help you.
A student loan, it seems to me, would be covered in a personal bankruptcy. How do they get around that?
Special legislation. They created special legislation just for student loans. It's an outrage. It's against everything else in the law. But as I say, our government decided we want the ability to have these guaranteed, so they created their own legislative guarantee.
That's outrageous. Caller, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, no, it's just the only thing I'm upset about is that, you know, they just started taking it out without a day in court or anything like that.
Well, that's
no summons,
you know, unfortunately,
no nothing.
That's what they can do. They,
yeah, that's
they
what have, everyone's told me now. Okay,
the
thanks for the info.
Legislators, you know, our congressmen, they passed this.
All right, thank you very much for the call. That's incredible. I had not heard that.
Yeah. Well, after my last show with you, Art, I got thousands of calls from people asking about student loans, and they're all suffering the same thing. It's one of the biggest disgraces and one of the biggest black eyes we have in this country is that, you know, people go and they get these student loans. They believe they're going to get an education. They get nailed by a fly-by-night company.
Hmm.
They don't get the education, and then they're stuck with the bill anyway.
Wow. When I purchased the property I have now and the house that I have now, Ed,
mm-hmm.
I determined that I was going to live and rot within its walls for the rest of my life. I love it, and I love where I live. So I homesteaded my home under Nevada law. We have very strong homesteading laws here.
Beautiful downtown Pahrump, yes.
How good are the homesteading laws?
The homestead laws have been very, very good, especially in states like Nevada, Florida, Texas, and others that have strong homestead acts. But, again, our wonderful government is trying to erode that by saying you can only homestead up to the first $125,000 of your homestead.
So they're trying to pass new legislation.
Exactly. They are trying to do everything they can to basically make the consumer the victim and guaranteeing lenders the ability to get their money no matter what.
God, I love our government. All right, Ed, stay right there. We'll be right back with Ed Pankow.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 25th, 1999.
Never, never to break that chain. And that's all it takes. If you have hidden your assets and split, one little break in the chain and you're cooked. So you've got to stick to your plan. That's what Ed says. We'll get back to Ed Pankow and more of this in a moment. Here's a kind of an interesting... Well, why don't I hold it till after the break? We'll do the break and then I'll read the facts to Ed.
Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999, on Art Bell's Somewhere in Time.
The following is from Mike in Armagosa, which is close to me here in Nevada, and it's entitled Living in Foreign Countries. Dear Art, in July of 1997, I retired from the motel business in Las Vegas with a small retirement income. I bought a one-way ticket for India for $250 a month. I had a beautiful new studio with refrigerator, air conditioning, utilities included, all that for $250 a month. He says, as my $250 a month example illustrates, one can have most of the comforts of home and still live cheaper, much cheaper than in the U.S. One advantage I had is that I had made three prior trips to India. I'd spent 7 months in India prior to the July 97 trip. Therefore, I had no culture shock on my last trip to India when he was going and just going to live there. And do you recommend that, Ed, that people go to these countries and get comfortable before they make the big one?
Yes. Before you go and make the big step, go take a week-long visit. Almost all these countries have cheapy tours through travel agencies, and you can go there, look around, see if this is for you, make some local contacts. There's a group called International Living, and they take tours down there. And they have a newsletter. You can subscribe to that, go to the internet, read about it, get all the information you can, and then go look and see. You might say, this isn't for me. I don't like to fish. I don't like the sun. I'd much rather be in some place that I can play more pinochle. Well, you know, they've got places like that. But you should definitely go and see if this is the place for you.
So it's kind of like a marriage. You want to live together a little bit first.
You gotta, you know, sit in the dark and raise your kimono, yes.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Hello there, Ed and Art.
Hi, where are you, sir?
Springfield, Branson, Missouri area.
All right.
And, first time caller, long time listener, Art.
Thank you.
And to Ed, I've read a couple of your books.
All right.
I wanted to get the word out or let you explain, because I'm not really that familiar with it, but the word expatriate seems to carry a negative connotation, and I would like for you to explain that a little bit, because I've read where several people, I've known several people in reality that have went to Costa Rica and Belize, etc., and more or less sent their passport home. Would you further explain the word expatriate? I don't think that means what most people think as far as...
Okay, that's a pretty good point. Actually, both are. One, expatriate does have a negative connotation to it here. Right, Ed?
It does, and it has in the past. Today they have a new term. It's called PT, which is either previous taxpayer or perpetual traveler. And that's the new terminology.
Really? All right, and what the heck else did he ask? Let's see.
The thing is, this negative connotation, it all comes back from the story in the book of the man without a country. But today, being a man without a country... in many cases, is a strategic and tactical advantage.
Okay, I remember. He was talking about people sending their passports home. In other words, that's it. I'm done with you, United States.
I'm out of here. I don't want to play the game no more.
Well, people have been doing this for years, particularly the entertainers and rock stars. Rather than pay Britain's 50% tax rate,
right,
they went next door to Ireland and paid no taxes. So the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, all of these groups, they gave up their British citizenship and said, you know, I'm now an Irish citizen. Forget my taxes. Do not deduct. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
How long do you think what we're talking about tonight, what can be done, I mean, personally, and successfully so if you do it the right way, as you have outlined in your books, not in totality here, but in your books, and if it's done the right way, how many more years or generations do you think we're going to be able to get away with this? Or do you think that the old one-world monetary and finally political system will take over and stop all this?
In some ways, they're trying to do that now. And
right.
I think that our generation and the people for the next 10 to 20 years are going to be safe because there's still going to be have-not countries that want to have. So they're going to create these opportunities. But the have countries, the ones that have had all the benefits for years, they're going to make it more and more restrictive to try and keep people from getting their money out of their countries. So if you're going to do it, now's the time.
So the audience, the people now living who are considering something like this, you can do it. You can probably get away with it for your lifetime. But your children, maybe not.
If you don't set it up for them now, they may never have the opportunity.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Oh, hello. This is Maria from British Columbia, Canada.
Hi, Maria. You're going to have to yell at us. You're not too loud
okay,
here.
Okay, I'll yell.
Thank you.
I listen to you every night up here. You've got a lot of listeners here, Art.
Thank you.
Ed, I read your book.
Good.
And I savored every page of it.
Oh, my
Seriously
kind of woman.
Seriously considering doing this. I'm on early pension, and I'm a single young woman. I'm worried about my safety in countries like this, and I'd also like to know about medical costs. What are medical costs there in countries like that?
All very good questions.
Yeah, great
question. Also, the safety of depositing money in banks. I do have friends who have...
Okay, hold that question for a second.
Yeah.
With respect to... medical costs. Right.
Well,
if you're in Belize and you get sick.
Medical costs are much lower in these countries, and the same doctors treating you there are the same ones treating you in the U.S. or Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You see, many of our doctors didn't go to med school in the U.S. They went to teaching medical colleges in Honduras or Costa Rica, and they have very good medical for 25% of the cost in the United States. Because they don't have to put up with the horrendous malpractice insurance rates.
And it might also be added, they have people all the time, I hear about people leaving the U.S. to get treatments that are not allowed here.
Yeah, our FDA has not approved treatments, and they do more experimental treatments and treatments that are frowned upon here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're looking for certain treatment that hasn't been approved or hasn't been tested on 10 million people, you may want to go to Mexico or to Costa Rica and things like that. But medical treatment is much cheaper. It is very good. And also, to answer your question about personal safety, I feel you'd be safer in many of these countries, particularly if you're in one of the gringo communities, than you would be on the streets of any major city in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah, but you're in Canada.
Oh, Vancouver.
Yeah. I was there a few months ago speaking at the Jerome Schneider Offshore Wealth Seminar. Wonderful place.
Oh, my goodness. I've seen so many of Art's guests up here on lecture tours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been wonderful.
Well,
and also, the safety
beautiful city.
Of depositing money in banks. Friends of mine had deposited in South America thinking it was safe, and then when they went to the bank, they said, sorry, you can't have your money back.
Really?
Well,
yeah.
If you do business, as Mae West would say, with a well-established firm, one of your big Canadian banks, CIBC, has offices all over the world.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. You put it in your branch of CIBC in Belize, and if for any reason there is any kind of unrest or you are not comfortable, you just give them a phone call or send them a a fax or an email and say, transfer my money to your branch in Scotland for the next 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So your money is as safe, if not safer, than it would be here in the U.S.
So I should just visit the country, set up a bank account, have a MasterCard, and I'm set.
You're in business.
Thanks right. so much.
Okay, thank you. When Gary North was on the other night, he said something really interesting and really shocking. When we go to the bank, Ed, we are told, consumers are told, that your deposit is insured by the FDIC up to $100,000, right?
Correct.
But Ed, I tell you, Gary North said, actually, the guarantee is to the bank, not to the customer.
That's correct.
That is correct. So,
and, you know, there, back in the 1980s, when we had our last S&L and banking crisis, and I did many of those investigations, there were a lot of people that had their money tied up, or people that had more than $100,000 in banks, and they lost it.
They lost it. And if there was a really serious problem, there is no guarantee directly down to the consumer. It's to the bank.
It's to the bank and to the fund. And the fund was almost bankrupted. It came real close to having to have, you know, major, major problems.
Boy, that's a scary thing to realize. And all of this stuff I'm finding out tonight that I didn't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Hi, this is Angela from Cape Coral, Florida.
Hello, Angela.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for Ed. He mentioned earlier about IRS possibly not being Y2K ready.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, do you think that the judicial courts in regards to a person's criminal record, if they'll be ready?
Well, those records are really stored at the county level, and they're first put on microfiche or microfilm. The
mm-hmm.
court record, both at the local police level and maybe at the national level, which is the National Crime Information Center, may get screwed up for a short while.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual record itself, which exists in the county, is going to be there and, you know, will be kept more or less as a hard copy. But the system could go down and they could lose, and many states have lost, a great deal of their criminal histories that they had on computer.
Okay. I don't have a criminal history myself, but the reason I'm asking, my husband is originally from Mexico, and he applied for permanent residency here after we married, and one of the requirements to prove he had to have a background check and all of this, and he needed to show an arrest record if he had had one, and he had a DUI like 10 years ago. They had to look this up in their computers at the courthouse here, and they could only go back 5 years.
Right.
They weren't able to find it. So I was wondering, when Y2K comes, you know, is it a possibility that a lot of people lose their criminal histories?
Well, some of it may happen, but again, if they really go back and look manually, the computer isn't everything it's cracked up to be.
Mm.
And much of the records from before computers, BC is 1985 in my book, but that information, it is retrievable, it does exist, but it can't be pulled up on computer, so it won't totally disappear, but it will be less accessible.
For a while, at least.
Yeah.
This comes off the ESPN wire, they've got a wire now, and it's a story entitled, filed August 20th, entitled Bank Insiders Can Beat the System. It says, it was an official document called a Suspicious Activity Report,
SAR, yeah.
Which banks and other financial institutions are required to file with federal authorities when employees detect unusually large deposits or transfers or other aberrations. Now, Ed, I thought we just went through this whole brouhaha about profiling bank customers, and the damn thing got shot down, but this would seem to indicate that there's something in place now that does report unusual transactions, large amounts of money come and go and whatever.
Oh, very definitely. The only thing that got shot down was the Know Your Customer rule, which basically said banks have to document not only who you are, but who you do business with, and identify them by photo ID.
Oh.
The actual profiling by the CTRs, the current reports and the SARs, the suspicious activity reports, those are still there. They're very much enforceable, and they've actually reduced the dollar limit from $10,000 to $3,000 on a currency transaction report in most jurisdictions.
You're kidding.
So they're tightening the noose, not lowering it.
Wow. They have that much control over money that you have already paid taxes on or whatever. I mean, if you just happen to have a bunch of money, they have that kind of control and tracking?
They do. And see, the government's got a semi-secret little agency called FinCEN, the Financial Crime Enforcement Network.
Yes.
And it's their job to gather this information and to use it to support other investigative agencies. So your material may be looked at an agency that makes the FBI look like little Lord Fauntleroy, and you'll never know it.
Incredible. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Oh, good morning, Art. Good morning, Ed. How you doing?
We're fine, sir. Where are you?
This is Joe Provo, Utah, okay. K-Talk 570.
And on a cell phone?
And on a cell phone, yes. I drive a truck in the morning.
I see.
I'm very involved with Native American issues, and I don't know if you know too much about that, but if you're involved with that, you're on kind of the cutting edge of conflict with the government.
Oh, yes.
And so we're fighting a nuclear waste dump out here against a consortium of utilities that are trying to, they've basically gone in and undermined the integrity of a small band or tribe, the Goshutes out here, about 45 miles west of Salt Lake. We're using my house as kind of a an area for setting up an office. We've created a nonprofit to be able to generate funds for legal expenses and so forth. And I put a couple of lines in, extra lines in my house, and one of them rang the other night, which I thought was odd since I didn't even know what the number was. And so I was talking with guys, and I picked it up, and it was dead. And, you know, just like as if it hadn't been hooked up. So I told one of the guys, he rolled his eyes back and said, well, now you're bugged. Ed, does that sound like I've been bugged?
No, not really. A lot of people think they're bugged. And that's not really the case. There's a little too much paranoia about that. There are, in fact, circumstances where things like this happen, but, you know, I wouldn't automatically consider that's the circumstance. I would definitely look a little further to see is there more substance behind that.
The real truth of the matter is, Ed, if they wish to bug your phone, you know, you all the time you hear people say,
oh, I hear the clicks.
You know, I hear the clicks. You know, I hear clicks and I hear crunches and I even hear somebody, I think I hear somebody breathing and you hear all this. The truth is, if they want to tap your phone, there's no way in hell you're ever going to know it's tapped, is there?
That's right. You'll never hear a sound because it's done through the phone company with their permission and their assistance and, you know, that's it. You'll never know. There will be no way to test it. And actually, there's no way to you know, buy one of these little devices over the telephone that say you're bugged. It'll never show up.
Yeah, of course not. That'll tell you whether an extension is picked up, perhaps, but that's about it.
Right.
And your book, I Take It Now, is not just Amazon.com, but it's available. Is it generally in bookstores around the country?
Yes, it's actually, it made number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
So it's everywhere, and I've got to thank you a lot for that, Art. But it's in all the bookstores. In fact, I was in one bookstore doing a book signing. They put 200 of the books in the window, and people that had never walked in this bookstore in their life were coming in by the droves and buying the book. I had a 3-hour signing party.
Yeah, I can see why. In a way, Ed, it's a sad commentary on our times that something like this would sell so well. And I in no way belittle your book, but it's just, it really is, isn't it? Kind of a sad commentary?
Well, it is. It's really, you know, unfortunate that our country has reached a point where people can no longer look at it as the place that we've been proud of for so many
years.
That's
right. That's exactly right.
It just, you know, it's not there anymore.
All right, listen, I've got one more hour. Are you good to go?
Oh, I'm good to go.
All right. If you'd like to email this brilliant man, he is E.J. Pankow.
That's EJPANKAU at AOL.com. If you want his book, my website, Amazon.com, you've got it on the way. Or, of course, in your local bookstore. It's called Hide Your Assets and Disappear, which is what I'm going to do for about 5 minutes. Be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
And Ed Pankow, who's authored Hide Your Assets and Disappear. It's a runaway bestseller, no question about it. And I guess if you've been listening tonight, you know why.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now, you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I argue with people about disclosure time and time again. I've told them governments are not going to come out willingly to tell us it's going to happen by a mistake, it's going to happen by a whistleblower, but it's not going to be an organized thing. Governments won't do that, and the reason why they won't do it is because they do not want us to know. They think that they'll lose control of us if we know. If you actually truly believe that we were being visited by extraterrestrials and you had categorical proof that it was happening, do you think you would listen to some of the bull that government throws out all the time? Absolutely not. You'd look toward the heavens, you'd say there's got to be a better way, and you would start doing your own thing. And you would forget all about government control and everything else. So the bottom line is, government will never, ever disclose the true facts of UFOs.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
Back now to Ed Pankow. Ed, I've got a quick fax I want to read. It says, Art, the government of Canada enacted legislation 2 years ago permitting Canada student loans to survive most forms of bankruptcy. This was because, one, 7% of all loans were in default 4 years after graduation. Two, of these, there were just a few too many doctors, dentists, and lawyers for the government to ignore the political heat. Three, when out of this smaller group, two or three simultaneously divorced the spouse who had sacrificed and delayed their own studies to put the other through school, lynch mobs were literally forming in the streets of oh-so-gentle Canada. Comments?
Well, the same thing is happening here. You know, the banks have put pressure on the government saying, we're not going to guarantee student loans unless you make them ironclad that people can't get out of them. And that's what's happened. You know, Canada went through this. We've gone through this. The next is going to be Australia and New Zealand. And it just, you know, every time something like this comes up and every time the government has some new program and that they want somebody to buy into it, they create legislation that guarantees it. I mean, it's crazy.
I agree. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Good morning.
Good morning, both Art and Ed.
Where are you, ma'am?
I am in Texas.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. It has immediate response to what you were just speaking of, and only a little more enlightenment. With regard to what they call fraudulent transfer.
Right.
Now, if you happen to have transferred funds out of the country, or even for this reason or that, to your children, and then later on you have to take Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which has nothing to do with the other, and this is not with consumer or big credit card debt, you can be nailed for the fraudulent transfer. And while the law says 1 year limit, this vanishes if they claim fraud, and then it's related back in time and they can find some reason. Now, this is the federal bankruptcy court.
Right. Well,
the thing is,
it has to be done in anticipation of a debt. If you transfer the money before you have a financial obligation or knowledge of impending financial obligations, then you can make those transfers and they cannot charge you or bother you under the Financial Conveyance Act.
Well, even under case law, which I'm very familiar with, it's your word against theirs whether you knew about a debt or anticipated it. But the interesting thing, if you have a creditor, let's say it's a business associate or even a relative, using your own money that they caused you to lose and then you claim bankruptcy, and they claim fraudulent transfer, they can fund the bankruptcy court trustee to reopen a case and make sure you are ruined.
Well, not necessarily. They can try to make that claim. I've testified probably in more than 50 cases of this
mm-hmm.
type, and again, it goes back to knowledge and intent. And the bankruptcy trustees and the bankruptcy courts really have very little jurisdiction outside the United States. And first off, they have to document and prove that such a foreign count exists. And in most places, that's impossible to do if you set up your account with no paper trail.
Right. And another thing, having done this,
yeah.
I would suggest that you do not travel from your home city. It's very easy to get to another city and book from that city.
Exactly. In my book, I tell people to fly
to
Mexico City and then get a second ticket from Mexico City to the Cayman Islands. Have a break in travel so nobody knows where you went.
Uh-huh.
Also, don't have your passport stamped, because if you're ever deposed in a court case, one thing attorneys do is ask to see your passport.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And they look to see, you know, where these good housekeeping seal of approval stamps are to indicate where you've been.
That is an ego thing. And just one other thing, a trustee can be funded by a creditor to reopen and then totally fund it. Now, if you're bankrupt, even if you have your cash in another country, you can't bring it back, obviously. But then you don't have the money to defend yourself, which is in district court, because, see, bankruptcy court's the only one without a jury.
Well,
I don't know
not
if you
necessarily.
Knew that.
And again, bankruptcy court is a federal court. District court is either a state court or a federal court.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's so many bankruptcies and so many issues that they don't have the ability to go and do everything that needs to be done. People make a lot of claims and a lot of allegations, but if they can't document them, that dog don't hunt.
Yeah, you bet. You betcha. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Ed,
Yes.
I'd like to know where in the world, I know here in America there's some wealth, but it's so hard to get to, but where in the world is there a location? I've heard of some people going to South Africa, getting dirty, and doing diamond mining and stuff like that.
Yes.
Is there still wealth in the world for a man who has some get up and go?
Oh yeah. Boy, is there ever. Ed?
Yeah, there's a lot of places. In Central and South America, there's emerald mining. There are tons of places, both in the U.S. and in foreign countries, that have gold reserves. You just take the stretch of highway between Denver and Durango, Colorado. There's people that go out there in the summers and pan the rivers and make enough college money to pay for the rest of the year's education. If you're willing to go out and break your back and sweat and work and want to do this, Canada, Alaska, Colorado, Honduras, there's still places with tremendous mineral wealth that are waiting, you know, to be picked up.
You know what I always thought it'd be fun to do, Ed?
What's that?
Go to a highway like you mentioned that is not frequently patrolled by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And just early evening, set up a toll booth. And I would be willing to bet you.
I like that.
I would be willing to bet you that 99 out of 100 people would stop and dutifully pay the toll, maybe with a sort of a cringing face, but they'd pay the toll and go on.
Probably. I had a grocery store manager that set up an extra aisle in the grocery store that was his own private aisle. Same thing.
Same thing, yeah. East of the Rockies, you're on here with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
All right, actually.
This is one of my favorite shows I've ever heard you do, Art.
I'm glad.
And I got to try that toll booth thing sometime. But I'm Josh. I'm calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I have two questions.
You guys have toll booths there, so it'd really work there.
Yeah. But number one is I was wondering how Y2K compliant is the offshore banking community?
That's a whale of a question.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it depends. A lot of the countries are very compliant, but others, they're low-tech. They keep all of their documents on 3x5 cards. They don't have them computerized. Uh-huh. As long as you've got a good hard copy, there's not going to be a lot of problems. But, you know, no one knows how the banking and brokerage industries, which are the ones that really hold our money, are gonna deal with this. I personally think that the stock market's gonna take a big hit between October, November, and December, that a lot of people win, lose, or draw are gonna wanna take their money out because they don't know what's gonna happen.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of the banks, especially the very computerized ones, may have some very real problems.
Mm-hmm.
The banks that are low-tech aren't going to have those kinds of problems.
Yeah.
What I'm most worried about, Ed, is the panic factor. I think that's more likely to do us in than the...
Perception is worse than reality every time.
Precisely. If you know, I've heard it a million times from Gary North and a lot of other people, and that is that if everybody, or even half of everybody, went and withdrew just a little bit of their money, the banking system could no more handle it than the man in the moon.
Exactly.
So they have got to convince people between now and then, come what may, that everything's solid as a rock. Don't go to the bank. Don't withdraw money.
That's true, because if people did start doing that, it would, you know, it would create a run on the bank. It would create tremendous problems, and it would be like a snowball going downhill.
Yeah.
Each step would create five more.
Oh, I don't know how you do that. It's that's as much of a mystery to me as what actually may occur with Y2K. I don't know how you prevent that.
Well, no one knows, and no one knows what's really going to happen. It's one of those things we're going to watch and see. What I've heard a lot of, and I agree with, is that, you know, things are going to wind down and people are going to get more and more conservative and more cautious. But if January 2nd comes along and nothing's happened, there'll be a tremendous upsurge again in stocks and this and that and everything else.
Yeah, that would make sense, of course.
But no one, you know, this is something new, and this is got ramifications that no one knows the real answer to.
Are you getting a lot of questions from your clients about Y2K?
Yes, I am. And they're asking me, you know, how can they go lower tech? How can they put their assets and themselves in a situation that if there is a problem that they can deal with it, that they can, you know, put their arms around it and solve the problem.
And what do you tell them?
I tell them basically that, number one, you want to have sufficient survival materials, food, water, electric, this and that and everything else, available to yourself to get you through a minimum of 10 days, just in case. And the other thing is your money. Number one, I would not want to have the government owing me money at that period of time. I would feel much better underpaying my taxes and then catching it all up in the end of the year than have some computer saying, "Dear sir, you're lost in the system. Within the next 9 months, we'll get you straightened out."
That really could happen, huh?
It really could. And, you know, from what I understand of the IRS and others, computer systems, they're just a huge mess. The IRS had a big problem years ago. They bought a huge Cray supercomputer. We're going to put in everything about everybody, but the system scrambled. It turned toast.
Aww.
And they lost a tremendous amount of data.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. It couldn't happen to nicer guys. But, you know, we just don't know, and, you know, in confusion, there is opportunity.
Always opportunity. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pangal. Good morning.
Art, how you doing tonight?
All right, sir.
This is the Lone Gunman from News Radio 630 KIDO, your affiliate in Boise.
Boise, Idaho. Yes, sir.
I've got a show Saturday night at 11 on KIDO.
All right.
Do you know how many hours we get your show in Boise?
How many?
9 hours a night, 6 nights a week.
How can you stand it?
We love you up there.
Well, I guess.
I'm sort of the Art Bell substitute on Saturday night. It's the one night you're not on the air.
I see. 9 hours a night, I can use a break.
Right.
All right. Anyway, welcome.
Ed, John Galt Society, hello to you.
All right. Well, I'll be seeing you guys in Australia. I'll be speaking there the first week of September.
I think you know my on-air partner, Andrew.
I do. Andrew and I are well connected.
I wasn't able to make it out to the last seminar, but he had good reports, said you're probably the best guest there.
Well, I tell you, I really believe in the John Galt Society, and it's an idea whose time has come.
Oh, we think so. We definitely think so. I was wondering, this might be more of a question for the general audience, but do you feel that there's any financial privacy available in the United States? I've heard that as long as your money is anywhere in the U.S., if it's in a trust, if it's in any bank account, it can be gotten to by the government one way or another.
That's true. If they allege fraud, if they allege alter ego, if they allege fraudulent transfer, there is no means to protect it. You can have trusts, partnerships, this, that. They can cut through it like a knife through butter. So if your money is here, you know, it's just open to any type of government scrutiny.
God, that's really frightening.
Well, they make the rules.
Art, you know, I was hearing you say that you didn't want to send your money out of the country because it might be a tad unpatriotic.
Yeah, I really felt that way. I mean, somebody unnamed sat down with me and talked to me about it, and I just didn't feel right.
Let me tell you something about that, Art. Our banks send their money out of the country. our banks send your money out of the country on the weekends to gain interest on days that they don't get interest in the U.S.
Yes, I know that's true. My feelings are very provincial, I know.
Yeah,
I think you're letting the bureaucrats define your patriotism.
Well, I'm 54 years old, and I guess I'm out of what is now the old school, and so I may have to learn a lesson. I don't know. I felt that way. I just somehow...
Art, I felt that way 5 years ago. If someone would have told me 5 years ago that I would be a radical, that I would be arguing against many of the policies that I taught and I worked for, I never would have believed it. But I'm like you. I'm 54, and I've seen the world change all around me. And today we do. We live in a different world, and we either adapt to it, and we either deal with things as they come up and create our own reality, or someone does it for us.
Well, I'm sure you're right, and I probably should reexamine how I feel about all this. I'm kind of glad you brought that up, caller.
All right. Well, hey, good talking to you, Art, and listen to the show on KIDO Saturday night.
All right. You take care.
All right.
And hang in there and fill the gap on Saturdays.
Will do.
Do you do 9 hours?
I got 1 hour.
Just 1 hour?
Just, we're brand new.
Good luck, my friend.
Thanks, Art.
Take care. All right. Ed Pankow is my guest. His book is Hide Your Assets and Disappear. I put in the... If you would like to email Ed, you can do so at E as in Elizabeth, J as in Japan, Pankow, run it all together, EJ Pankow, PANKAU, at AOL.com.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 25th, 1999.
It's bound to happen. That is to say, the period of time between now and January 1st is going to be a very, very interesting time. Weather-wise, Y2K-wise, stock market-wise, it's going to really be a fascinating time.
Now we take you back to the night of August 25th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
We were talking about, the way you feel about things, and the way I feel about things a little while ago, Ed, and
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting conversation. I have what I call my mortality theorem, which is that as we get older, the music of the day sounds like crap. Society begins to change in a way that we are no longer comfortable with, and that includes financial and social aspects of society. The laws change. The government begins to be more intrusive. Privacy disappears. And so, you see, by the time we get to be in our 70s, if we make it that far, even our 80s or better, we're ready to throw up our hands and say, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I don't like it anymore. Take me away. And, you know, the new people, what do they know? They're living with the brave new world, and for them, everything's okay. That's my mortality theorem. You know, God, take me. I'm ready.
I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, so do I. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Hi, am I on?
Well, yes, you are.
Oh, great. This is Diane on Camino Island, Washington, and Art, I live near Gilbert in Oak Harbor, and I always wanted to go look for him here, but decided not to. But anyway, I have two quick questions, and one kind of goes to when Ed was a private investigator.
Sure.
I've done article writing, and I found that, this is going to sound strange, but I find that men in general will tell women all sorts of things. They almost don't perceive this as a threat, and I've been able to weasel so much stuff out of people just
because you're a woman.
Just because I'm a woman, yes. Did you find that with any operatives you worked with or anything like that? Or?
You must not have heard the first part of the show.
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Ed employs a woman who has a voice that will cause a man to tell her anything she wants to know. Right, Ed?
Yeah. She has a voice that no man can hang up on. And, you know, in my staff, I've had a staff as high as 75 people. And two-thirds of my investigators were women because women are more detail-oriented and better for doing certain kinds of work, like particularly the court record research and the just digging. Women want to know. They have this insane desire to know. And they do. They make the best investigators.
Well, I was doing some marketing research, and I found I had a real talent for this. And the next thing I know, that they have me doing all sorts of little buying things on their competitors, and I mean, I didn't have to say hardly anything, and these guys would just sort of
gave it all away, right?
Gave it all away. But anyway, my other question is how good is creating a nonprofit organization to hide your assets under?
Again, if it's done with the intent to commit fraud or to defraud creditors, or as an alter ego of an individual, they will slice right through that like a hot knife through butter.
Oh, okay.
It's all. The issue is the intent. If the intent is to have a charitable foundation and it's used as a charitable foundation, that's one thing. But if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck and quacks like a duck, they're going to think it's a duck.
So, if you had a legitimate sort of, you know, we've been doing sort of wildlife rescue on the side here, and, you know, if we turn that into a real charitable organization, I could, you know, if I...
If you're doing real charity, they'll never be able to bother it, and they won't bother it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Well, then, let me ask you this, Eddie. In order to become one of our nation's top 10 private investigators, was it necessary for you to get really in touch with your feminine side?
Hello.
Or just hire a bunch of females.
Well, I've got a lot of women that are just real good at that. You know, I work better the way I am.
I've got you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're all right, sir.
This is Daryl from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Calgary, yes, sir.
You spent some time in Costa Rica about 3.5 years ago. That's a beautiful place. If I was going to go move somewhere, that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
They also... down there have settlers' rights. If some guy owns some land and he doesn't live in the country, he doesn't show up there at least once every 6 months, you can jump on the land and stake a claim.
Hmm. Well, it's not quite that easy, but, you know, some people have tried that and things like this. You've got to protect your property and your claim, but still the law and the deeds and the records today are pretty well caught up. The one thing about Costa Rica
is that the real estate prices in Costa Rica have gone up 500% in the last 5 years, and Honduras and Guatemala and Nicaragua are not going to be real far behind.
Wow.
So they're, right now, they're the places that everybody's looking to go to. But the handwriting's on the wall. Even Cuba, we as Americans can't go in there and buy property, but the Germans, the Italians, and the French are in there buying up everything they can get their hands on.
Canadians.
Or the Canadians.
Yeah, Canadians. I was about to say that.
Yeah, the resort that we stayed at was owned by Germans and Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a beautiful place. Another thing I like about it there is the beaches are all public land.
Right.
You can pitch a tent on a beach, and nobody can tell you to leave.
Really?
Exactly right. This resort that we were at was right on the beach, of course, in Nicoya Bay. And there's guys wandering around on the beaches there to live in the nearby villages, and the resorts don't like having them around because they're coming along and they're taking business away from the people that are working there, i.e. taking them fishing for a price. But there's nothing they can do about them because they stay on the beach and the beach is public domain.
All right. Well, then that makes me want to ask the following question. Ed, we believe, most Americans believe, and this may be another one of my old myths that and balloons that are about to be popped, but we think we live in the greatest bastion of freedom in the world. Is that still technically true?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. As far as having the personal freedoms to be able to express yourself, it has been for many years. But again, we've got more to protect now, and so the interests that have the ability to do so will do it. But as far as having the other freedoms to not be taxed without representation, to not do things or to be able to have the ability to be more creative, no, we don't have that. And there's other countries that have a lot more opportunities.
Boy.
And, you know, it's always a question of the haves and have-nots. When this country was a have-not, we invited people in, we did everything, but today we restrict the people that can come into the United States. We restrict the amount of money you can take out of the country. Mm-hmm. We do all these restrictions because we've become a have instead of a have not.
That's a sad thought to contemplate. I mean, I guess I've done a lot of travel, Ed, and it did strike me, I'm afraid, in certain places that the style of living was easier, more friendly, and it seemed like there were more freedoms, at least on the surface. Now, I guess our freedom of speech is pretty much still intact, but even that is beginning to get curved edges to it, isn't it?
It is. Everything now, people are trying, and the government's trying to hold on what it's got. So slowly but surely, all of those things that we've taken for granted are changing. There's too many people, there's too many interests, there's too much competing interest for everything out there.
And we're like the frog in the slowly heating water.
Yep.
Or lobster or whatever, I don't know.
That's right. As long as it's done slowly, we're never going to complain.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Gentlemen, it's good to talk to you tonight.
And to you, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I was wondering if there is something like an FDIC equivalent that works with the offshore banks and how much they insure up to.
There is no such thing that really works. There is an organization that calls itself the IDIC, the International Deposit Insurance Corporation, but it really doesn't have any backing. Basically, in these other countries, you do business on the strength of the institution, like a Barclays Bank or a this or that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not something that crosses any borders or lines. Certain individual countries have their own kinds of insurance, but there's no international insurance that really, you know, provides any type of protection.
So would it be safer if I was going to put it in at like a German bank that had a branch in Aruba or something like that?
Yeah, you take a large international bank, a bank that has got worldwide branches, experience, and stability. They are going to be a much better candidate for your business than the Joe Bag of Donuts Bank of Belize.
Like the Bundesbank or something.
Yeah.
But it's still not risk-free, though, is what you're saying.
Nothing. Today, nothing is risk-free. I mean, we just step out of the car and walk down the street, and there is risk.
Yeah.
But there's no risk-free banking, even in the United States. We like to think there is, but...
Over $100,000.
However, if you look at... institutions like we were talking about earlier on the island of Man, for example, they have been safely storing money and providing interest accounts for people far longer than any bank in the U.S. has been doing it. Right, Ed?
Yes, they've got a much greater, longer banking history than we've ever thought of, and they've never had the failures and the problems.
So that's another way of thinking about it, caller.
Okay, well, then Isle of Man and the big international banks. I'll keep that in mind.
All right, take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi. Hello?
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 Yes?
Yes. First-time caller?
Good.
I wanted to inquire about the corporations of Nevada. I'll get the detail on that. I think I've got involved in it.
All right.
Family Limited Partnership in Nevada?
Yes. We are having there's like a gold rush going on. There's like a gold rush going on. People leaving California mm-hmm. and coming to Nevada.
Yeah.
So specifically, what is your question?
Are those asset protections any good? There's companies advertising today. Go Nevada, California, anyone in California, Oregon, Arizona, join the corporation, asset protection, take your titles to your real estate, put them in Nevada under a fabricated name, put your bank account under in a limited partnership, and they cannot touch it. They say they guarantee
that
company's advertising it right now. Hello?
That's not true, because basically, again, if the civil authorities or the government alleges fraud, they can mm-hmm. cut through all of that, especially if you do it in a fraudulent name or anything. There's always a paper trail that can be followed for money, and the more steps you take to wiggle, the more likely they are to find you guilty of fraud.
Interesting.
The only thing that Nevada really offers different in a corporation is that they only list one officer or director rather than three. But if you've written a check for a corporation, if you've transferred money out of an entity into that, there is a record in the banks. And they're going to be able to follow that, and when they find it, you know, there's a word. It's called BOHICA, and it stands for Bend Over, Here It Comes Again. That's what you're going to be dealing with. So the people that are selling all this and promising this are making empty promises.
BOHICA, I've got to remember that. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
BOHICA, that's a good one.
Yeah.
This is Chris in Choo Choo Town.
Chattanooga?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Mr. Pankow, the Allen Life sounds wonderful, but I can't help but think of the Andy Griffith Show where Howard Sprague decided to move down to the islands and soon found that there was nothing to do. For a person who's not retired, what sort of work would there be besides milking coconuts and peeling pineapples?
Well, there's a lot of work down there. These companies are really coming into the 21st century. So they need people that have teaching skills, people that have computer skills, and if you can repair a god in Honduras, if you can repair a car in Honduras, you are a god. Any of the skills we have here, sales skills, there's many American companies that are looking for agents to go down there and sell their U.S. product in these foreign countries. But Intel, the big computer company, just built a huge plant in Costa Rica, and, you know, they're employing thousands of Americans as well as many thousands of Hondurans and Costa Ricans to build computers and to do work that was formerly done in the U.S. So there's plenty of work down there. My mother-in-law moved down there 4 years ago. She now owns the largest real estate business in the island of Roatan and makes far more in Honduras than she ever made in the U.S.
Mm-mm. How about that, caller?
Right.
I'm with you on islands. I lived on islands for a lot of my life, and you get island fever after a while. But if you're in, say, Costa Rica, why, you know, it's a fair amount of land around you. And
Well, you can always travel. If you deposit $50,000 in the banks of many of these countries, they will give you citizenship and a passport in any name you want. So if you want to not be Art Bell and become Joe Bag of Donuts,
yeah,
no problem.
50 grand, and I've got a passport and a new ID and a new life if I want it, huh?
Right.
Incredible, Ed. Wild card line, without a lot of time left, you're on the air with Ed Pankow. Hi.
Hi, Art. Ed, there's a great way to practice disappearing without actually doing anything, and that's you call up Alcoholics Anonymous, and go to their meetings, and you can have a whole new name, meet a whole new class of people, and it seems to be that underclass of people that deal with cash only, and you can practice getting a new job and a brand new life, and see if you can handle it. Just call up in the white pages and head down to one of their meetings.
That's a new one for me, but I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, too, but it's really anonymous, and they'll protect you with their life, and it's a cash-only society. It's kind of scary because there's some undercover cops, but they're there secretly. You know, they don't even want their bosses to know that they come to our meetings. It's kind of fun.
Huh. That's a new one on me, too, but I do understand the theory. In other words, I think the one thing that people should really do before they take the first step is to really go visit that country, really decide if they're going to make a happy step or they're going to get down to Belize or wherever it is, and they're going to be suddenly very, very unhappy. So a little bit of investigation before action would be in order, right?
Definitely, definitely.
All right. Well, it has been a great show. A second, just absolutely outstanding show, Ed, and I really, really want to thank you. I hope your book sails right back up to number one on Amazon.
And we're headed that way.
Yeah, I bet. A lot of people are going to order that book, Hide Your Assets and Disappear. And it's Ed Pankow, and Ed, we will do, I'm sure, another program yet. It has been a real pleasure having you on the air. Do you have any final words for the unhidden masses?
Well, I guess the one thing is that before you jump into anything, whether you invest your money, your life, or your heart, remember that magic saying, when in doubt, check it out.
It's the business you're in.
That's right.
How long have you been doing this altogether, Ed?
Actually, I became a private investigator in 1973, so it's more than 25 years now.
25 years. That's like me and radio. If you had to do it all over again, would you do anything different?
I really wouldn't. I've got the best job in the world. I love it, and it's something I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, I know the feeling. All right, my friend. Thank you so very much, and until we meet again, and I'm certain we will, you're a very popular guy. Thanks, Ed.
My pleasure, Art.
Good night.
You have a good one.
All right. That's Ed Pankow, and he is one really bright guy. I think you're going to enjoy his book. Let me again, once more, give you his email address. I know a lot of you want that. It's E.J. Pankow, all strung together, lowercase, E.J., P as in Paul, A-N-K-A-U, at AOL.com. Ask him a question. He answers his email. I try. I'm Art Bell at Mindspring.com. And we'll be back tomorrow night with a very, very unusual, controversial show. It's not going to be for the kids, so get the kids to bed. Then, by the time I come on the air, they ought to be in bed anyway. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.